and welcome to Homegrown Horror.
But wait, you might be asking yourself, I thought these bitches were on break.
I thought they got canceled.
Well, here's the thing. We mentioned in the last episode, this is another bonus
part two
of it. Because we needed some extra time to finish the book.
We asked for an extension on our reading assignment.
We didn't.
We're very bad at reading. Turns out we don't know how to read. And yeah, we needed a bit more time to get through this 1,000-plus-page book.
This biblical
tome. You could found a religion with this thing.
Yeah, Jackson like walked in and put it on the counter, and I was like, oh, it's huge.
I don't think you realize how massive this is.
It's as big as Ben's penis.
Oh, shit. Little spoiler for what we'll talk about today. It's not going to be all about that.
No. So,
To encapsulate this madness, I think we didn't talk at all about logistics here, but I think maybe it'd make sense to talk about what we liked, the good things. Then we can get into the weird shit.
Yes. So, and also this, I think this is a little later than 2 weeks, like we said it was going to be, because I went to a wedding over the weekend and it was like, I guess we're pushing it to...
Our schedules are totally off. We haven't been checking in. Actually, yeah.
We haven't talked in like 2 weeks.
Which is, I'm not kidding, it has felt like forever.
Which is also not normal for us.
No, like we're literally talking to each other, if not every week, every other couple of days usually, you know?
And I mean, I've been texting you like in all caps about shit about the book.
I've been kind of ignoring you because I don't want spoilers.
You could have said no. I tried really hard to not spoil things.
Really? So. It didn't seem like you did.
No, there were a lot of things that I...
No, you didn't. In all honesty, you didn't really spoil the book. You just added like major plot points. But I wouldn't see that as spoiling because of the other shit that goes on in this book.
And also, like, for example, I mentioned like he does straight up cheat on Audra. Are we surprised? Like, he kind of does in the other two.
Yeah, he kind of does.
I didn't think it was spoiling since we've already consumed so much.
Yes.
Trust me. Like, the big fucking twist, which is... I'm just going to go ahead and say it now, because who cares? This is all spoilers. Spoilers. It being pregnant?
Yeah, that's wild.
Jackson... I wrote out this whole text and I was like, no, he needs to experience this because what the fuck?
That was something entirely unexpected and also felt inconsequential.
It really was.
It was so anticlimactic.
Except for Ben like stepping on the babies, but like.
It felt like there should have been some kind of hanging on moment where it's like, oh, we missed one maybe or whatever. Or a thought even just to be like, couldn't possibly have killed them all, you know? Spoilers everywhere.
Yeah, just so we're... So, Jackson.
How do we dissect a 1,000-page book?
I think you're onto something. What did you like?
Okay.
What did you like?
Okay, on a very high-level review of this book, I loved the world building. This is excellent world building, and this is exactly what I was missing from the movies. Mm-hmm. All the context and all this like weird little history of the town put into more detail, you know?
Yes.
I loved it. And okay, so in this book, for those who haven't read it, like, please go ahead and give it a read. I did enjoy it. There's some weird shit about it, but we'll talk about it.
I mean, if you're like, Jackson... I can't... Hold on. How many pages is this actually?
Well, okay, before that. So, like, there are 5 different or maybe 6 different areas where there's called interludes.
The interludes are wonderful.
They're wonderful. There are literally, like, conversations that... Or other snapshots of, like, the history of Derry. And it... funnily enough, I feel like we go to the police a lot in them. And it just... Because it is fascinating to understand how are the people feeling about the events happening in their town, knowing there's so many child murders specifically, while no one actually gives a shit.
It's 1,153 pages. I highly recommend the audiobook if you don't mind some weird shit being pumped into your ear holes.
I gotta see it. Reading on paper isn't much better. And with that, a benefit of like, I can go back and be like, I did just read that, right?
Right.
Yeah. They're doing what now? In the junkyard? Okay. We'll get to that, we'll get boys. To
that. So I think I agree. I definitely, the world building is really wonderful. I think I had texted you like way back when I had first started reading it and I got to the first interlude where... It's either the first or second interlude where Mike's dad is talking about the black spot.
Yeah.
And his history being a black serviceman in Maine.
Yeah. It's fucking brutal.
It's just also like beautiful storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, this is really like the thing with Stephen King's writing is like when it shines. It's shot like he's an excellent writer.
He's an amazing writer. I think, yes,
because Allegra had asked me when it's I finished fantastic it. Fantastic
storyteller.
You know, she. It was funny. Allegra had asked me like, so tell me your final thoughts, and I like went like we were just laying in bed in the dark, and I just went on like an hour long tirade. But
we should have just recorded that and called it a day.
But I think sometimes I can't. It's difficult because there are some times where I'm like, does it need to be this long? But also. I can't necessarily say what I would and wouldn't cut out.
I think it needs to be this long because of the tone of it in general. It starts off, the pacing is slow in mm-hmm. a lot of parts, and other times it's lightning fast.
Mm-hmm.
It's beautiful. Like the action sequences and the fear sequences that Stephen King's write is like... It is adrenaline pumping.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It is... Like, because though it starts off in such a like it's soft tone really.
Yeah.
It's not very aggressive. It's very slow overall and it's so focused on just like family dynamics and details which there. And
is
like
also what I liked about yeah. Pet Sematary.
Yes. Oh my God. And that was a great part about Pet Sematary yeah. was the dynamics between
and them. That's the thing about
all the emotions. And you could and that was basically what this was. This was pumped full of the emotions of the characters.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody had time to shine. Even people I had no clue that I thought I was going to see much of, like Mr. Keene, really shined in the moments that were focused around them. You know? Mr. Keene being the pharmacist that tells Eddie about the yes. placebo that he takes. It is a both terrifying, kind of terrifying part because he's really I fucking creepy
in,
about
I
it.
I love being in Eddie's head.
Yes.
During this part. Because yes. in the movies, it does happen. Well, mm-hmm. in the newer movie, it's Greta that does it and it's not as impactful. But like, yeah. and the thing that I love about it is because we get to be in the character's head, we actually get to see the change in Eddie.
Yes. Eddie's...
It's so delicious.
I think Eddie's like, arc oh my is God. One of my favorites.
Which I think him dying makes way more... Like, the fact that he has come this full arc. And
mm-hmm.
I will say, I think more people should have died.
I also we'll felt... I also kind of felt that way, yeah. It's like...
Because we're talking about what we liked. It's hard because mm-hmm, it, mm-hmm. I just... I'm like, yes, but this... I think a lot of the character work is really wonderful. I yeah. do think when Stephen King does characters well, he does them very well. And then like a good example is like I struggle with Bev as a character.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. So, but most of the characters, I really, really like them. I think that he breathes life into them. They're like, and then some of the section, oh my God, one of the interludes, the one where it's like the axe murder.
Yes. Oh my God.
The interludes are amazing. That's
they're all really well detailed.
All of them are,
and they're super fucked up sometimes. It's amazing.
Yeah, and then the other section that I ended up like it ended up really fucking me up was when we kind of got Patrick Hockstetter's backstory.
Yeah, that was really rough.
That but actually, at the same time, it was really good, like well written.
Okay, and that's something that I do want to say is like what I really liked about this, having watched the movies so much. Like we talked about, we get the details of everybody. We get so much about Henry Bowers, Patrick Hostetter, and the
which
rest.
I
like,
love.
We didn't get any fucking information. It's just like here's the goons, and they're one of them is crazy. It's like mm-hmm. we didn't really get to know anything about Patrick Hostetter in either of the movies. He was kind of a blip. Patrick, like Hostetter, though, was the driver in the new movie for mm-hmm. for Henry, whereas in this it's Belch.
Yep. Belch Huggins.
But yeah, Patrick's whole backstory is fucking tragic, and he's a fucked up dude. Like, effectively, he's a psychopath.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's the correct diagnosis, but you know,
that's what he's called in the book.
But the thing is, like that. Yeah, that is like he has like hallmarks of a burgeoning serial killer, starting with. It's interesting that he moves on to animals. He starts with his infant brother. And it just, like, I feel like I audibly, like, gasped.
I was reading it and going, no, 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 no. Because it's not, like, a quick, oh, he killed his brother. No. Stephen King goes into detail of the feeling the child... Mm-hmm. Of the child thrashing this under is Patrick.
Part one of Are You Okay, Stevie?
Yes. We're going to need to, yeah. Someone's got to check up on Stephen.
I think
you'll recognize him at his house. Just knock on the door, ask if he's okay.
I mean, he's pretty active on Twitter, so I think he's eight.
Is that him or is it just it? It's feeding the discourse.
Trying to think of what, oh my god, I do think my favorite part is, like, I think the pacing is really good. I think the world building is great. Most characters are great. The interludes are fucking stellar. Like, he's a great writer. I can't, you know, but I think, you know what, again, I'm gonna save it. I'm trying to, like, stay into the positives right now. So anything else that you liked?
All the characters, like, I didn't hate anybody. And I didn't feel that way when I was watching the movies. I was kind of... Because I had the acting to rely on as sort of my gauge of actually liking the characters or not really, like... A lot of the characters you didn't... Well, I mean, in the new movies, you interacted with everybody a bit more, which I liked. In the new movie, you don't get too much of a grasp of everybody's sort of internal thoughts. You gotta, like... You get quick snippets of everybody.
That's the plus side of...
That's the beauty of the written form.
Written from an omnipotent... kind of omnipotent point of view is, like, you really do get to get... That's what I like, is even getting into Henry's head and Patrick's head and, like, getting in there and really digging, really, like, digging in. We even get a point of view from it.
We do, which I fucking loved.
Loved it.
That was so much fun. It was so amazing to, like, get in the head of a cosmic horror and have it, like, articulate its fear. That's amazing. It was so interesting. And I think
that was so amazing because, you know, one of the main themes of this is fear.
Yes.
And, like, the thing that is causing fear with it, it's striking fear within most of these other characters, is in itself afraid.
Mm-hmm.
The bully is even afraid of something.
Right.
And that is good writing.
Another thing about the good writing. So there is these moments where Bill is in this thing called the void, as it's described in the book. It's really hard, like, to write a scene that makes sense when all physics are kind of suspended for a moment.
Yes.
It's really hard to grasp what's happening as a reader. And that's, like, a big complaint that I have when it comes to, like, science fiction and, like, cyberpunk fiction in particular. Because this felt like I was going into the cyberspace that you typically see in some of this fiction. And, like, it's really hard to nail what that actually looks like on paper.
Yeah.
And so it's very easy to be, like, confused about position, direction, or what the fuck is even going on when it comes to those passages. So Stephen King did a really good job of being able to articulate this kind of floating, this weird ether.
Would you consider this science fiction to a degree?
Horror in some way is science fiction.
Yeah.
They do go hand in hand. And I mean, it's just science fiction is, pretty much horror. Science fiction is basically fantasy. And then, like, horror, I guess you could say, is, like, a subset of both those things.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
Because what it is just, like, setting up a world, and it has rules you live by.
Yeah.
That's the premise, basically, in both of those directions of writing. It's just like, oh, do you have magic or whatever, high fantasy? It's like, oh, there's cosmic horrors? Yeah, sure. Those are the rules.
Cosmic horror. I like the way... I can't say how further disappointed I am after, like, understanding book ritual of Chud.
It was really like, okay, just found it.
compared to the movie.
Yeah.
I'm so disappointed in the movie more because I thought the ritual of Chud in the book is fucking hilarious.
It is really funny. There's
something about it that's like brutal and hilarious.
Just kind of like
you bite onto its tongue, it bites onto your tongue.
Yeah.
And you just
go for it.
Go for it. And I also liked because it did do the thing that we had suggested to the movie, which is like, you know, they're like, it has shown up in all of these various cultures. It does choose the Himalayas,
yeah,
which you could say is still indigenous in a way.
Yeah.
But like, they're like, this is the one that we could find.
Mm-hmm.
But is saying like, they seem to be the people who figured out what to do.
How to deal with this.
But yeah. We've seen it in other cultures.
Yeah.
Including like, this one, and not just like, we're going to pick a random fake Native American tribe mm-hmm. and make a ritual with a pot. And
it's nice to, yeah, like, it was pretty funny to see that, like, oh, yeah, that's what we were saying we should do. But, yeah, no, I like that they could have that discovery. I did think it was really funny that they're like, okay, Ben, sure. We'll just go along with that. Or no, it was Bill that found it.
Yeah, they're like, yeah, sure, Bill. Fucking,
okay, sounds
that's
good.
That's fucking weird, but okay, I guess that's what we're doing.
I loved all the... Okay, so going back to things that we liked. Mm-hmm. I really loved all the interactions of the relationship building with the characters themselves. Like, everybody had a moment, it felt like, where they're like with each other one-to-one. And to a point where I almost thought like it wasn't going to be a thing. Maybe a bad moment to pick it, but like there is even one moment where Beverly is thinking about hanging out with Eddie. They threw that in there, not in a great time. We'll get to why that is. But like there was still, there's a connection to everybody being connected to them.
The other thing is, I think, because you said the characters are all very likable. To your point, it got to the, I really wished that there was some more, like I mentioned it to you in passing that I think that Ben disappears.
Mm-hmm.
Adult Ben like kind of disappears to a point. Same with Eddie and I mean Mike's fucking hospitalized, like, you know, I miss them.
Yeah.
I miss them because we get such a, you know, we focus a lot on Bill and Beverly.
Mm-hmm.
Also partly because, you know, they also have some stuff writing on this as well because their spouses have appeared.
Yeah,
how did you
feel
about Tom coming to Maine?
It was just something I never thought about, like, in the 1990s version, knowing that that was sort of the dynamic at that. And in 2017, it just seemed improbable. But it was, like, it was terrifying to have that from the perspective of Tom being so relentless and trying to find Beverly.
I felt so bad for her friend.
Oh my God. So yeah.
Kay was an awesome character.
Yeah. So
I liked her a lot.
He like ends up harassing this like super cool, like feminist lesbian gal.
Yeah.
Who's just super badass.
You know, she's best friends with Bev and like, or you know, adult friend, like, cause she has her best friends from like.
But Tom basically fucking beats her up for information.
And she does give up the information, but I love that she still goes the extra mile for Beverly. And she is like, she calls the operator because that's what you had in the 80s. And she's like, give me the number of every single
and she just goes
hotel
down the line.
Or motel in Derry.
It was nice that she ended up having that courage because it was kind of fearful of like there was a moment of her like hanging up a bunch. And I did think, oh my God, she's not going to go through.
She did it.
But she did end up doing
like, I'm just sort of like, she's a solid character because she's like a solid, like she's just sort of like a solid person.
Everybody was like well-written in their own right. Like mm-hmm. even if they're scumbags, everybody was really well-written.
I hate being when we get Tom's point of view. I hate it.
Yeah, no, that's super fucked up. He's a piece of shit.
I mean, it's good because Stephen King made me hate it.
You know? Well, that's the things I like is that, every character that is despicable is super despicable. And also the funny thing we get in this also is that we get a little bit more, I think, sympathy for Henry in a weird way in the written version because he's just so starved of any affection. Like, and that's why he's fucked up in the way he is.
There's still a part of
me that... And that's really well detailed in the book.
I think that I like the fact that he's a cop in the movie, but I do think... This version works, too. Because the character of Henry's dad is very... It's almost one-to-one, except for he's kind of an outcast that's had trouble with the law in the book.
Yeah.
And he's a cop in the movie.
I think it kind of makes more sense that he is an outcast and is kind of like... just like despised by nearly everybody because he's such a shit father and a drunkard. They don't expect him to be able to do anything. Also, hella fucking racist.
Oh, like there's a section where like listening it to audiobook, I literally was just like, I don't know what to do. Like, I can't process this. The amount of N words that were just dropped. I was like,
it was, there's actually a moment when Henry is attacking Mike in the library, and one thing he yells at Mike is literally just a string of racial slurs towards black people with no spacing, and I'm like, what the fuck is going on here?
Yeah, it's a thing. It's a thing, and it made me deeply uncomfortable.
Yeah, it was very uncomfortable,
and I think that's what it should do.
I think it did.
If you read that and you're totally, if you read that and you're a white person, you're like, this is normal.
This is normal. No.
I highly recommend you go get some sensitivity training.
Go to the coastline.
Put your feet in some water.
Touch grass.
Like, yeah, it's, he's bad. I think that something that I thought was interesting too, and again, this is just me talking as a white person, but just sort of the way that.
You're always talking as a white person.
I'm never not white. But the fact that Mike's having this conversation with this other kid, and this kid is like, oh yeah, my dad like uses the N-word because like they're hard workers and whatever. So really, my dad's an N-word too. And it just made me realize like how complacent people were.
Yeah.
In the use of some of these terms, because they're like, that's
this was 1958.
Yes. Although I will say, when they're all sitting around and playing, they're playing Monopoly, and Bill's parents come home, and I think Stanley had made the joke first, where he's like, Jews are good at making money, and then he repeated that, and his mom was just like, Bill! And I was like, oh, we found the non-racist parent for the 50s, congratulations! You're not a racist.
Congrats.
She's like, what did you just say? And they're all laughing, and she's like, we good?
Yeah, like, what the fuck is happening?
You shouldn't be good, but
don't say that.
Don't say that. Please don't say that. But yeah, like, she's the only one that, like, actively reacts to the racism.
Yeah.
Because everyone else is like, they're like, oh, I'm not racist, but they're being complicit. And I think that that's pretty spot on for this time period.
Maine? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it makes sense as far as, like, attitudes. I'm not saying that it's, like, it's good they had this racism. It makes it more realistic. I'm saying that it's...
No, I'm saying...
It's like, okay, yeah, this feels like 1958, I guess, not having lived in that time.
Yeah, it's an interesting view of being like, oh, like, you can say, like, you don't hate black people or don't hate Jews, but still be complicit in the racism.
Yeah.
And that was, like, most of our history.
No, 100%. People being racist without realizing they're being super racist.
Exactly. Yeah. And it seems like Stephen King is aware of that.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. No, this
which
book...
Which I think is... That's very...
There are a lot of parts about this book that are pretty self-aware. There are parts that are not. Anything else that you want to, like, add about what we like? I'm trying to think.
I think for the most part, like I said, the most part I really liked this book. I gave it a 4 stars out of 5. For reasons we'll get to. There's a reason why I knocked a star off.
I give it 4 stars also, because I'm a tough grader, and there are some things I didn't like about this book. But I think that it's definitely worth a read. Not only because it's so well written, but because it's a fucking classic at this point.
I would say also, like, take the time to pace yourself. You don't have to I don't think you have to read it in, like, one go. Because it's fucking hefty.
I do have one more thing to add.
Oh, go for it.
Pennywise himself is fucking amazing.
Oh, he's so good.
Like, he actually outshines, I think, both the Pennywises that we experienced on screen. Like, he's described
she.
By...
Sorry. Oh, it's she. It's a she.
It's a she.
It is a she.
It is an it.
It is an it, but she's pregnant.
She is pregnant. I don't know if you can gender...
Heavily pregnant.
I don't know if you can gender it.
An eldritch horror.
I don't know.
I don't know. I played Sucker for Love. Or I watched someone play Sucker for Love.
Did you watch the Markiplier video?
I did.
It was funny. Yeah. It... What was I saying? It's great. It was described by Richie as like Rodney Dangerfield in a way. And it was like, yeah, no, he's just like fucking, he's literally clowning on their asses.
Yeah.
Like the entire time he's making jokes. He's adding unnecessary details. Oh, like there's the part where they got to look at when he's a werewolf and he gets hit. They look at the back of his jacket and it says Derry High School Killing Team. And it was like Pennywise 13. I thought that was fucking funny. Just like, all these like random little gimmicky things.
Like for some reason he really cares about the little details.
I do it for the art. He does do a lot of pop culture references, which is really funny to me to think that this cosmic horror is like watching movies, getting ideas.
I just remembered. One of my favorite parts is when when it dies, the town fucking gets destroyed.
Yeah, that was awesome.
And to me, I was like, how amazing. Because that's something that I had an issue with in the movies is I'm like, everything seems so inconsequential. The entire fucking town gets destroyed. People die. Like
that's like the end of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I think her entire town gets destroyed at the end.
So, and for me, it worked so well because, you know, Bill says so often, it is the town is it.
Mm-hmm.
And in doing this, the town falls apart.
Yeah.
It's like Derry has been.
The very foundation
of
Derry is crumbled.
Yes. And it's so good. I feel bad for the lady that gets fucking, just, she dies. She's sitting on the toilet and she just gets fucked.
Yeah.
She's just reading the book on her toilet and gets fucked. The guys who, like the first responders that get electrocuted.
Yeah.
Like it's mayhem.
It truly is.
It is straight mayhem.
The fucking entire mall just crumbles. It's amazing.
You know, a lot of the older folks that we've seen in the interludes, they kind of have cameos again. Like, it's brilliant.
Yeah.
And it does answer one of my biggest pet peeves about a lot of media, which is like, so you're just going to tell me that, like, everybody else is just going on.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no one else is being affected.
Yeah.
With this thing. And I love that it's addressed, that it's like, no, like...
It is
felt.
People
are very... It's a shift. Like, the clock doesn't even strike. Like, it's a shift.
Yeah.
In the universe. Because it is the eater of worlds. He has created... It's amazing.
And he loves to vacation in Maine.
Yep. So... I will say, so moving into things I didn't like, my biggest disappointment is everything after that part.
The sort of like pick up the phone, talk to each other,
the wrap
little
up.
Like epilogue scenes. They were very quick. Yeah.
I don't think it was necessary because then we get the loose ends tied being like, oh, well, Mike is okay now. And oh,
the whole thing with Audra.
Ben and Beverly. And I'm like, number one, here's the thing. Ben and Beverly don't have a lot of time together like they do in the movies.
Mm-hmm.
And she fucked Bill.
We'll get into it.
So that gives me a twofold issue of, so you're just going to like stick Ben and Bev together and be like, yep, there, that's them. And then try and make me feel like, oh, he's staying with Audra. What a good husband. You fucked somebody else. You literally had a thought that was like, if I'm going to cheat, I'm going to go whole hog. whole hot dog in her bun.
Oh,
like
That
is how he described. He's like, I'm not gonna halfway cheat. Fuck you, Bill. So this whole thing, like, we do get the whole thing, like, in that scene, we see that in the 90s movie with the bike, and Just cut all of that. Better yet, I did propose, and I'm going to propose it to you. If I had a rewrite,
okay,
which I don't, because I'm not Stephen King. Yep. It's not my property.
Stephen King, we got a good deal here at Homegrown Horror Studios for Ghost Rider to re-adapt, re-engineer your greatest work. What's your proposal?
So, everyone dies except Mike, because Mike's sitting it out. He's in the hospital. Everyone else dies fighting Pennywise because their stories have kind of come to a close. Mike then, as the lighthouse, you know, he starts to forget and he leaves Derry and he goes on to live a life that the others would be proud of.
I think everyone should die.
I'm just saying, if we want to have that, you know, Stephen King was like, let's put a light at the end of the tunnel. I'm like, make light. You have a lighthouse. Like, make him more important. Don't just throw him away. Like, make him being taken out of the equation significant.
I get what you said. I hate it. I'm not too upset by the people that we did see in the movie die. And like, the people that we knew were going to live in the movie continue living. I'm not too bothered by that, but I do agree more people should have died.
Yeah.
Like,
they're just...
I like the moment of Mike kind of fighting for his life in the hospital. Like, I thought that was... The danger was still present to him, and...
I was happy that that was there. Yeah,
I was happy to know that, like, he was not, like, just... Totally. Taking a backseat. Because that's what it felt like in the movie, the 1990s one. Like, he gets injured, he's in the hospital, and we get fuck all of him the rest of the
movie. The book is a good middle ground, yeah. I think. Because
it's like he has a struggle
with
himself.
Him being there in the movie was fine, but there's the whole thing with him lying to them about the ritual of Chud that I don't like.
Yeah, yeah.
But, so, one of my biggest gripes is the ending, which Stephen King has a reputation of people not liking the ending, which they poked fun of in the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I think for me, like, the end is its weakest point. And that's, for me, that's after Derry is destroyed, like, the kind of epilogue-y stuff. I'm not a huge fan of it. I didn't like it as much, and I was just kind of like, are we over yet?
It would have been nicer to just leave it open-ended and been like, and they're looking at the wreckage or something like that, you know? Like, and then that's over, because it's like, everything that happened, I agree, everything that happens after that doesn't matter.
No.
It's like... Great, everyone's kind of living their best life, basically. Yeah, that's what we get, and it's like...
I do love how Beverly does go back to Chicago and basically does a goodbye Earl, and she's like, I put in a missing persons report.
Did my best. You know, I did my due diligence as a housewife.
So, yeah, I think the end is one of the weakest parts for me. Because I think if I had to put it, the end is pretty weak. The beginning is slow but solid. The middle is just, mwah, it's so good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the meat of it is so good. And it's kind of bookended by these parts that I'm kind of like, they're fine.
Yeah. The middle is really amazing. I did like how it started also. I thought the beginning was pretty good. It was a nice setup. It was slow, but it was good.
Yeah. You know? I mean, the Adrian Mellon murder just hurt me.
But that was really rough. That was really rough, yeah.
So if we say there's that,
mm-hmm.
and then sort of like set, like after Georgie's death, sort of setting all that setting up with the characters, and that was kind of... that's the part. But... Elephant in the room?
You mean the unmatured elephant in the room?
Oh, no!
So, okay. You know, if you heard last week, we like to joke around a lot about the fact that there's a child orgy in this media.
Please don't take any of what we say out of context.
I give you full permission to record everything that B says and use it on whatever the fuck you want.
So, we both were under the impression that there were reprints of this book where the child orgy is not in it. That is not the case.
B got to the scene before me, like, for, I think it's
so funny. Oh, one thing I did hate is, as adults, her having sex with Bill.
That was awful.
I don't think it was necessary.
That was truly awful.
But so when she's having sex with Bill, she orgasms, and that shakes into her memory the fact that she had sex with all of them at the ripe age of 11 in the standpipe.
So we get that little, like, number. B screams at me via text.
I'm like, oh my God.
It's in here.
What a time. Yeah, because I was like, there's no way that they cut it out if they're referencing it here.
Yeah.
And I was also like, how bad is the sex that triggers that memory? She says it's good. Also, I will
say, you haven't gotten much bigger.
Like, here's the thing. If she's having sex with like the 2019 version Bill, sure. Bill has no hair and is like particularly aged. Like for his age in the way Stephen King describes him. Like
he seemed like, you know, he was just a couple gym sessions away from a Mr. Clean.
Yeah, probably.
You know. he wasn't hideous.
No,
you know?
But...
He lost his hair.
He is not... But here's the thing. He's not good looking enough that everybody that sees him and Audra are like, why'd you bring Frankenstein's monster to the party?
Oh, fuck. You're right. Well, they do shit on him a lot.
Yeah, they're like, we don't understand. And also, the other thing that's... is that Audra looks exactly...
That comes later in the book.
Audra looks exactly like Bev.
Oh, fuck, you're right. Yeah,
and I'm kind of happy we didn't do that in the movie, really.
I'm happy about that, too.
Because
that'd been really
I get a lot... We'll get there. I get a lot of weird vibes about
No, I agree. So the thing I didn't really like was Bill's infidelity was something that kind of bothered me quite a lot. Especially, as you said, looks like Audra. It just kind of feels like his... connection to Audra is just some unfulfilled
fantasy.
Desire to be with Bev. And that's kind of fucked up and cheap to Audra. I mean, if that's just the way Stephen King intended that, I mean, my opinion of Bill is pretty fucking low.
Yeah, and that's why I didn't like this whole bit at the end where, like, he's trying for Audra and, like, he suddenly cares so much.
Great
and
character,
I'm like,
written, but, like, morally, don't like.
Yeah, I'm like, what is your, like, oh my, are you serious? Like, we're really trying to pretend, like, trying to be like, oh, they get a happy ending now? I don't know. Audra needs to leave his ass.
Yeah, Audra should not be. I hope she
and
remembers, her thoughts of the infidelity happening.
Yeah, you know, she's in the hotel kind of across the way, and she's like, she calls, and they're like, oh yeah, someone went into his room, and she's like, oh my God, he cheated on me. Like, she knows.
Yeah, or she has the inkling. Yeah.
So that whole, like, the whole sex scene, Stephen King's sex scenes make me uncomfortable. I don't think they're not the same as, like, reading, excuse me.
His scenes don't make me necessarily uncomfortable, but I don't want to, the thing that bothers me. They don't make me horny. I don't think they're meant to.
No.
I don't think Stephen King is, like, writing something out with a raging boner and he's like, this will get the people going.
Be very disturbing for us. What is it? Dick like an exclamation point.
Oh, did you write them down?
I wrote another one down.
So the thing that I didn't really enjoy specifically about all these erections it was describing
the stony,
boys' erections.
The stony thickness of his cock.
That was in the sex scene, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
In the adult sex scene.
In the adult sex scene.
Because then there's also, again, elephant in the room, the child orgy. So there are a lot of things I don't like about it. Number one being
that
the
it's
fact
a child
that
orgy.
They're all 11.
Top of the list, they're children. It's very hard. It's very hard to walk back when it starts with that.
Yes. So the other thing is, so we did look because we thought it was cut out, and a lot of people, you know, in the discourse, people are like, "Well, I don't even remember it. It's like one page."
How do you not remember this?
When I heard
this
it,
is so uncomfortable.
I was like listening to it. I was listening to it mostly on double speed, and it felt too long.
So it's about 6 pages long in the book.
Which, yes, is a drop in the bucket for 1,153 pages, but...
But I had to read that shit. I had to read that with my fucking eyeballs. And it's stuck there now.
It's not... So, context is... They are like, oh my god, what do we do now? Our friendship is based on our fear of it, and now they think it's dead. They're like, and now it's dead. Like, what do we do? What are we going to do? Like, how are we going to be connected to one another? And, you know, the girl who is traumatized around sex, and maybe her dad wants to fuck her, and her dad, who was, you know, possessed by Pennywise, tried to be, see if she was quote unquote intact. Thanks, T.I. And she, her idea, she's like, I know how we can stay connected. I need to have sex with all of you. As she's undressing and they're like, what are you doing, Bev?
It was the only way to get out.
The fact of the matter is, like, she does say something absolutely asinine, like, my father was right or something like that. Like, it's something about her father.
Her father, she's like, was right about her enjoying sex, I think, was what was being stated there.
But it's before she... oh my god, I can't. That's what my thing about Bev is. I'm like, I don't think Stephen King 100% understands what it's like to A, be a woman, or B, have sexual trauma as a woman.
I agree with you there. Like, so our thing, not necessarily, I mean, we have a problem with the fact there is a child orgy.
Yes, but
I
think, but there's additional...
The larger context of that being the fact that, yes, Bev is abused, and her purpose is to fuck everybody.
To connect them again.
Like, she's so sexually abused, so her decision is to fuck everyone? That doesn't make any sense.
It's so frustrating. And she has sex with them one by one, and the thing that's so frustrating, too, is, like, she's so focused on their comfort.
Yeah.
And they are like, oh, Bev, I don't want to hurt you, I don't want to hurt you. But, like, they just take her words at face value. I'm getting angry. I'm like, wow, I didn't realize how upset this made me. Like, they take her words at face value when she's like, no, I'm fine. And she's like walking them through it. And then at the end, she's just sort of like, you know, she's like, she feels like a hollowness that these boys will never feel. And I'm like, fuck you. Fuck you all. So I hate it. Okay. You know, and it's bad. And I also told Allegra, like, there is something distinctly do it for England. Are you familiar with that turn of phrase?
Yeah, I am.
Yeah, where it's like, well, England needs babies, so lay back and have sex.
Yeah.
Even if you don't want it. Because it's like, she thought of the birds and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, there's so many layers to how wrong this is. I think the next part that's wrong is the description of her, of Ben, age 11, and Bev, age 11, completing orgasm together.
Yeah, yeah, that's... Also, apparently, Ben has a massive cock. We learned that in this. Just in case you're wondering, how detailed could it be? We know that Ben has a massive cock. That's how detailed it is. We're not going to get into it. I'm just letting you know.
I don't know. Do you want me to read a part?
No, I don't want you to read this. No, because the FBI is going to be bursting down this door. I don't think this can actually be sold in bookstores.
And then it's just over. And it's...
How dare you? Her phone just passed.
Uber Eats said a sweet deal.
Wrong timing, Uber. So, anyway.
Also, here's I will say, maybe it also, not only the fact that, like, they're children, and this scene also distinctly reminds everyone, Bev is a girl.
Mm-hmm.
And as somebody who's had, I've had guy friends that didn't want to fuck me. Which is an awesome feeling. okay?
To not want to be fucked?
Yeah, by your... Yes, because by your I've guy had, friends. Oh, okay, I've had I guy gotcha. Friends who...
Because, oh, you have that awkward moment where they're trying to fuck
yeah,
you.
Yeah, they are your friend because they want to fuck you or they want to date you. Like, I had a friend who... Allegra dated him for, like, a week in middle school. And then in high school, he continuously gave me a lot of gifts. Like, all the time. And he's like, I know you're not interested
in... He came a-courtin'.
Yeah, he was like, you know, he bought... Jackson. He got me a Build-A-Bear.
It's not so bad.
Do you know how expensive that shit is? Like, for a high schooler?
Like $35.
With no job?
Like $35, you could just spend a good friend. I mean, that, you know. I would agree that probably not the first thing I would think either. But also, I think that a Build-A-Bear is nice.
It was nice. It was nice. And I was like, thank you. And he was like, he was very clear. He was like, I just really like you. But then we grew apart because I continuously turned down his advances. So then we weren't friends anymore because the benefit was gone. And then he got a girlfriend and that's very nice for him. And they're married, I think, and it's very nice. But it's not fun.
I bet he didn't get her a Build-A-Bear.
Here's the thing. Okay, next thing. That's Bev's whole thought process when she's holding Audra's like half-dead body is... I was his first love. I bet he didn't have sex with you in a standby.
Oh my god, I bet you didn't have fucking sex in a sewer when he was 11.
And it's just like, it's a nasty feeling of like, she feels that she has to compete with Audra for Bill's affection.
Yeah.
And she's like, well, I'm prettier than, like, I have bigger boobs than her. Like, it's all of this sort of thing. And it's, I'm like, I understand this is the 80s and this is also, like, this is honestly, like, there are some worse depictions of women that came out of the 80s.
100%.
You know, but it is very frustrating that it is, like, we have these clear delineations that, like, they're all in love with Bev.
Yeah.
They all do have sex with Bev. And that makes her distinctly different. She's never going to be, quote unquote, one of the guys because she is just a girl.
I would say it's okay that, like, there are those... Everybody has a feeling of, like, love towards Beverly at some point.
And they have feelings of and love, like, towards each other.
And they do. And I think that's fine to have that in there. But yeah, no. This whole shit
I think I don't mind, like, this thing between, like, Bill and Ben liking her and her...
Like, kind of like a triangle thing, yeah.
That's fine. I don't think they all need to, be in love with her. And that's part of the
reason. It's varying degrees. Like, Richie, yeah. I think, probably has, like, the weakest link in that regard. Well, Eddie, definitely. And then Richie, not so much. But there was that description of, like, him going on a date with Beth Ben was there.
Yeah, but she does say, she's like, I was all of their first loves. So, like, canonically... But it's just, like, that's kind of why I liked this idea of... And I tried to, like, just put it in there. That idea that Richie was actually in love with Eddie the whole time from the 2019 movie.
That was a really cool moment. And also, like, you could kind of think that in this. And, well, no, you couldn't because he's very obviously straight in the book.
Yeah. But, you know, it's... I think kind of on the same topic of sex is I think it's really weird that part of Pennywise's curse is none of them can have children.
Yeah, that's wild. Like, what? Why?
It's so weird.
He's the best birth control.
I sent you that text at one point because, like, they make such a big deal of it.
So as we're kind of, like, getting into the weird stuff also, just to touch back to other weird shit that made me go, what the fuck? There was all of Patrick Hostetter's story, and there was the moment, and it actually kind of made sense, I thought, for Henry. So I'm not mad about this.
Mm-hmm.
Still was like, what the fuck? What am I fucking reading? So there's a moment where, like, Patrick and Henry are hanging out in a junkyard. Bev is hiding from them in, like, a rusted-out car. She's peeking out, trying to find her moment to get out, and is, like, watching Patrick jerking Henry off.
No, so, number one.
Yeah.
Sorry, I just have to... So their pants are down.
Yeah, their pants are down.
Because they are...
lighting
their farts on fire.
Yeah, so that's
so the reason their pants. So I want to point out that initially this is not a sexual thing.
No, it's not a sexual act.
But yeah, then he's like, which again, I would like to point out, Patrick Hockstetter is 12.
Is he 12?
He's 12.
Okay, yeah.
He's straight up 12. 12 years old. And yeah, he asks Henry, "You want me to blow you?"
And then Henry punches him.
Yeah.
But yeah, reading that, I was like, why does this need to be in here?
But also, it's really weird because it's like, oh, there's something wrong with him.
Yeah.
And so the fact that he was enjoying getting it from... That's a weird kind of connotation of like, he's losing it. And so that's why he enjoyed a guy jerking him off.
Yeah, he's gay.
It's very weird.
He's crazy. He's a gay guy.
He's
now.
A crazy gay man. But I mean, we do know...
But I think that feeds more into his home life and his suppression of like who he should be,
who he is,
and he's just growing to be a hateful, spiteful asshole.
Yeah. So speaking of Henry,
mm-hmm.
So you know we've got this whole thing where we're like, oh, Bev, you know, Bev has the trope of abused girl marries her dad,
yeah,
kind of thing. But then somewhere they are like, you married Henry, and I'm like. And they make a big deal about how Bev married a guy that looks just like Henry. Like, in Tom's, like, last moments, like, they see him and they're like, oh my god, you did marry Henry. And I'm like, why?
I forgot about that.
I'm like, why are... That makes no... Like, this doesn't thematically make sense to me. Because, like, Bev has always been terrified of him.
Mm-hmm.
And he never... I don't think he ever tried to do anything specifically sexual to her.
No, just threaten her.
But he
almost got her in that one instance towards the end.
Yeah, but it's just like, it makes more sense to make the comparison to her marrying her father as opposed to Patrick Hockstetter.
Yeah, that kind of came out of nowhere.
It was very bizarre.
Yeah.
Because, like, you could have gone with, like, he looks like her dad. Or, you know, because we went with this thing with fucking Audra looking like...
Which is what we
to
got.
To the point where, like, Tom notices, and he's like, Tom knows that Bill married Audra because he looked like Bev.
We got that moment in the new movie. Actually, it might be the same actor. Where Beverly's husband looks pretty similar to her dad.
He does. And then also, Eddie's mom and Eddie's wife are played by the same actress.
Yeah. Actually, it said maybe that guy was the same actor. Okay.
Because, yeah, they did do that.
Yeah, why not?
So, yeah. But it's... Yeah, it's weird.
So the other, like, weird thing, I mean... Let me shift gears a little bit.
Go for
it. Something fun.
Yeah!
So how would Pennywise interact with today? Because we kind of get a... In the 2017 movies... That's more like...
Oh, he's like playing with the TVs and he's on the TVs and things?
Yeah, he's fucking with TVs and stuff. What would he fuck with today? Like, I got an idea. You're watching your favorite TikTok of your favorite Insta, though. And, like, she's doing a twerk. And then she's flipping her hair and she turns around and it's Pennywise!
I was gonna say... I feel like Pennywise would, like, try and infiltrate Twitter and then be like, oh, no. My work is done. I don't have to do anything here.
Or maybe he buys Twitter for $44 billion and then fires everybody.
The biggest fear.
Just clowning around.
The biggest fear. Job insecurity. I think that he... Oh, my God. How would he... I think that there would be... I don't know. Because there's a part of me that, like, I like the way that they, the new movie kind of did it. Because, like, they did bop it up a little bit in terms of, like, where, you know, where their adult
mm-hmm.
era lies. So, as opposed to it being in the 80s, I think it is kind of in today.
It is closer to today, but it's...
I'm fine with them not making a big deal about technology and things. I like the use of the TVs. Well, I think it was more, like,
90s
like...
or something that they're... I forgot what the timing of the new movies was.
Yeah, because they're children in the 80s.
Right, right.
So oh, yeah, then, yeah.
Right,
so,
horror time.
There's some weird situations too. Like, you know, I understand that they're hitting puberty, but also a grown man writing about, like, Beverly wanting to touch Bill's ball sack.
I don't think that's bad necessarily.
No, it's just weird. But
it's weird to...
I think that was my...
There's a weird line. I can't tell you where the line is, but there is a line that gets crossed at some point.
Because, like, I think I wasn't as upset by that. Like, looking... With the orgy being in here, everything else pales in comparison.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the funny thing is, like, whatever, like, weird little moment... Oh, you know what was fucked up was Beverly crying when they were adults and Bill was getting an erection in the middle of it. I'm just like, why?
How about Bill getting an erection on the bike?
Yeah, that was fucking weird. Bill got a lot of erections now I think of it.
I think Bill is just constantly erect. I think he is horny as hell. He needs to go to the doctor.
Well, he keeps popping these blue vitamins.
Oh, I just, it's a good book. There are some parts that are just, like, I really don't have that much that I dislike. We briefly touched on it in the other, episode.
These are videos?
There's no video.
Where's the camera?
There's no video. There's a lot of fat phobia.
Book.
And we gave it the benefit of the doubt initially.
And we were disappointed by that. Yeah. There was no payout for any of that, really.
Ben is a good person. Like, it's...
Ben is genuinely good in the book, I think. Ben is
genuinely good, but the thing is, like, he was genuinely good because there was a thin person under there all along. The people who are fat and remain fat are
the evil ones.
Like, Eddie's mom has all of these reasons why she's a terrible person. Being fat is not one of them.
Yeah, that's fair.
They don't really do anything. The other thing is, since this was written in the 80s, I would also like to point out
By the way, like, I don't think the listeners got a good enough idea of just, like, how kind of, like, fat phobia, whatever.
It's bad.
We're talking about, like, Ben is glorifying the actions of a past coach of his for fat shaming him and, like, grabbing his moobs. And just, like, being an absolute shithead to him and saying that you disgust me, everybody disgusts me.
Yeah, he's like...
And then he was like, and then I turned around and got fit.
Yeah, because he did it out of spite. It's the same as the revenge body, as somebody who really, like, tried to use that as a motivator for losing weight and then consequently... TMI, ended up with an eating disorder.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of Ben's behaviors that he does describe are disordered. Sorry, not sorry.
Yeah, they are disordered.
They're, like, highly disordered.
Yeah. So, it's not... And again, like, we were thinking, like, but there was a lot of weird fat phobia, kind of.
Yeah, it continues through the book, specifically around Eddie's mom,
mm-hmm.
too. Because, again, they're like, well, Ben's a good person. And, yeah, there's a lot. I don't want to, like, belabor it too hard, but I have a background in this sort of thing and, like, really dissecting media around it. So
I really want to put in my LinkedIn profile, not to stomp on you right now.
Yeah.
Really expert at something.
Really expert. Not or really, but I have a background in...
I have a background in something,
I have
yeah.
a background
I want to put that in my bio.
I have a background in trying background to dismantle fat phobia. As someone who has a history with eating disorders and has been in a larger body my entire life.
Yeah.
Especially when Stephen King starts throwing around numbers.
Oh, the pounds.
Like, he mentions, he's like, I was X amount of pounds, and they were like, oh my god, or he's like, I gained X amount of weight, and they were like, oh my god, that means you're X weight, and I was like, oh, I've been over that for most of my adult life,
mm-hmm.
and for them to be like, oh my god, that's so awful, is like, didn't make me feel good, which is part of the reason why I stopped reading it for so long. And I just, my audiobook was just stuck in that part for so long because it was really, really difficult.
Yeah. But you read it and we now know it was meaningless.
That was the thing, is I had a feeling, I was like, it's not gonna, this was written in 1980, it's not gonna come to anything. And that's part of the reason why I'm like, I wish that there was more Ben Ben is a great character for all his flaws, for all the flaws in his the writing of him. Mm-hmm. Just like I do like Beverly for all the flaws of writing her.
I like all the characters, you know? And I mean, they all have their own flaws, and they're all interesting and unique. Yeah, some got more time than others, but I never thought anybody was written badly. I think everyone was written incredibly well.
Yeah.
And that alone is reason enough to go check out it. I mean, that's over 1,000 pages. There's a lot to really enjoy in here.
The Los Angeles Herald Examiner said the Moby Dick of horror novels. Having read both of them, I think the only thing they have in common is
A large white antagonist.
I was going to say, the biggest thing that they have in common is they're both very long, and they both have two guys jerking each other off. Moby Dick is really gay. Don't at me.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah.
So, we did it.
We all know what the whale is supposed to be.
So, we did it. We read it. We told you our opinions about it. I think, so...
Read this book!
I was going to say, in the grand scheme of things, how would you rank the two sets, or the 1990, the newer movies, and the book? How would you rank them? 1990 goes to the bottom, personally.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. I think our list is the same. 1990 is at the bottom, new movies in the middle, book on the top. Now, that gives you something to say. Like, for all the things that we just probably ranted about the things we didn't like more than what we liked. But the book's fucking amazing.
The book is really, really good.
Yeah.
Like I said, I imagine, like, if you have issues with some of the, like, the sexual assault stuff or the hate crime stuff or the fat phobia, take your time with it and allow yourself to sort of sit with it. You could also say, and the racism, you could also say, like, maybe that's part of the horror. Because those are the more realistic things that we have to worry about in the world.
That's the real horror. The racists we meet along the way.
And his name is Henry Bowers.
And Oscar.
Oh, dear God.
And the entire police force.
So, we will see you again in this month for Super Happy Fun Times with the Good Son.
I forgot we were watching that.
So, we will see you again soon.
See you at the end of the month. It's the middle of it now, so I'll probably go up this week. All right. Yeah. Bye!